Welcome to another episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast. I'm Cincinnati.com sports columnist Jason Williams, along with Bengals beat writer Kelsey Conway. We're back. Kelsey, how are you?
I'm great. It's been a while since we've gotten to hop on the pod, so I'm looking forward to talking to you more regularly now with the draft coming up and then OTA starting. And then the next thing you know, we'll be kicking off training camp. So looking forward to catching up.
Been a lot of news about this Bengals team on and off the field since you and I last, at least we've talked between the last time we had a podcast many times, but free agency. We did a free agency episode, and here we are sort of after free agency. Let's talk about free agency, Kelsey. Just when someone asks you about Bengals free agency, what do you tell them?
I mean, I guess I'd probably start with the shock of the team signing Orlando Brown. I knew it was probably pretty likely that the Bengals were going to lose a couple of their top free agents. I for sure thought they were going to lose Jermaine Pratt and Hayden Hurst. I didn't anticipate them not being able to re-sign Von Bell, but
yeah.
The Bengals were never, once you got the details of Von Bell's contract, the Bengals were never going to pay an almost 30 safety for 3 years. That's just not something they've historically done. So that one was a little bit of a shock, but I think everybody thought Hayden Hurst was just going to take a discount friendly 1 year deal again with the Bengals. And it turns out he also got a 3 year deal, worth up to almost, $12 million. So those two were a little bit of a shock to me. But I would say the biggest surprise was them signing Orlando Brown simply because it was kept on the low for so long. And the Chiefs decided to let Orlando Brown test the market. And apparently once he got the go ahead from Kansas City, he called up the Bengals and said, I want to come play for the Bengals and play with Joe Burrow. And apparently the Bengals were like, I had Bengals pro scouting director Steven Radicevic on my podcast a couple weeks ago. And he said, once they got the call from Brown's agent, they really went to work on, okay, how can we make a contract work for this guy? And they came up with a very inexpensive, you could say, contract for a starting franchise left tackle. And that, that news broke at 10 p.m. at night on a Wednesday. And your immediate thought goes to, whoa, I didn't think the Bengals would ever be able to land a mega tackle like him. And then you go into, well, what does this mean for Jonah Williams? So I would say probably the Orlando Brown news was the biggest surprise to me. But what was the biggest surprise to you as you were following along from a distance?
Well, certainly the Orlando Brown signing was as well, and just how it kind of came out of nowhere. This team, I think you and I talked about, I can't remember, I at least remember thinking this, that I thought Von Bell was really the guy that when you looked at their free agents that I really was hoping that they would keep, given that they were losing Jesse Bates, given that Dax Hill was still adjusting to the league. I thought, Von Bell was really a key guy to keep of their free agents. And, that didn't happen. You're thinking, okay, what is going on here? And then out of nowhere comes Orlando Brown. You're like, okay. And I think the thing that's impressive, and it speaks to the impact of Joe Burrow, not just his direct impact, but his indirect impact on this franchise, is they now have people calling them wanting to play here because of Joe Burrow. It almost feels just unheard of, certainly in Bengals, for the Bengals to have free agents call them up and say, well, because you have this guy, I really want to be part of that. That to me is that speaks a lot to Joe Burrow. It speaks a lot to the winning culture of Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow, that what they've established here. And it'll be interesting to see once they get Joe Burrow locked up in his contract extension, How many more guys are going to do that over the coming years of free agency? How many more guys are going to call the Bengals? Maybe they're that guy or those guys over the next few years or whatever aren't on the Bengals' radar necessarily, but then they call the Bengals and say, "Want to play with Joe Burrow? What can we do?" That to me is very impressive.
So you brought up probably the biggest talking point. Well, there's a lot that I want to get your thoughts on here. But so let's start talking about the Joe Burrow contract situation. Pretty updated with where the Bengals seem to stand at the combine. Asked Duke Tobin and Zach Taylor about it. And Duke Tobin said, you know, it's not done yet. It'll get done when it gets done. But they don't anticipate it being a process where, you know, sometimes it's pretentious. That's what they think. And they said that, you know, they think they have a good number of what it's going to look like. And then at the NFL owners meetings in Phoenix, I had a chance to sit down with Katie Blackburn and ask her. And she's really the one that's negotiating the deal as the Bengals' lead contract negotiator. And she said that, you know, basically we decided, both sides said, we're not going to talk about much until there's something to talk about. Yeah. So it doesn't sound like they're anywhere close on that deal, or they could be in just kind of keeping it under wraps. But in my opinion, I think if they were closer, it would have gotten done. Because if you look at what happened with Jalen Hurts' contract extension, the Eagles clearly wanted to beat the other quarterbacks to the punch. Like, they wanted to not have to match Joe Burrow or Justin Herbert. The Eagles were like, we're going to beat the Bengals and the Chargers to their deals, and we're going to get our guy paid. And then that then becomes the floor for Joe Burrow and his agent. So that's $51 million annually that the Bengals are surely going to have to pay Burrow more than that now. So while the Bengals aren't in any rush per se, it is, the time is starting to tick, because if the Chargers then get a deal done with Justin Herbert and it's even more than 51, at what point, you know, do the Bengals not want to say, we want to get this done sooner so that we don't have to keep matching whatever the market price becomes for these quarterbacks?
Yeah, that's a great, you know, with each one of these signings elsewhere, you know, it gets more expensive. Although, you know, I'm sure the Bengals, well, I'm not sure. I mean, I know the Bengals are well aware, and I think they've been putting a lot of things in place over the last, you know, year in preparation for this. They're going to be ready, and I think, you know, Joe Burrow, both sides, and I think people should understand, and I don't sense this, and I'll ask you, but it doesn't sound like there's anything contentious here, right? I mean, that's not how I'm taking it. You know, just, I think Katie Blackburn said, you know, it'll happen when it happens, and when you have something to report, you have something to report. But you don't sense there's anything contentious between the two sides, do you?
No, I don't. And Joe Burrow was present for the first day of voluntary off-season workouts yesterday. He's in the building. And from everything we know about Joe Burrow and his character, you know, he's not a me-first guy. But I think it's important to bring this up, is that everyone kind of just assumes, because Mike Brown said he really likes the way that the Chiefs structured Patrick Mahomes' deal over 10 years, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what Burrow and his agent want. And I don't think they should take that. I think Patrick Mahomes kind of got fleeced with that deal, because they made that deal off predictions of what the quarterback market is going to be over the next 10 years. Well, what if it doubles that? And, you know, Patrick Mahomes is underwhelmingly underpaid. So I think you're looking at a contract for Joe Burrow that's 3 to 5 years, not 10 years. And although that might be what the Bengals want, at the end of the day, Katie Blackburn said it's what Joe wants. And I think that was the biggest kind of like light bulb for me, that, you know, even though Mike Brown said he likes the way Mahomes' deal was structured, at the end of the day, it is what Joe Burrow wants. He has all of the leverage here. You could argue that there might not be a quarterback who's gone into negotiations, maybe Patrick Mahomes, that has more leverage than Joe Burrow. And I think, I don't anticipate him taking that 10-year deal, because I think if he's trying to, you know, this is the life-changing contract he's going to get. Yes, of course, he's probably going to get multiple contracts after this, but this is the one where you have all of the leverage in the world. And wouldn't you rather have a chance to take a 5-year deal and get another crack at another mega deal when you're, you know, 30, if he were to take a 5-year deal, as opposed to if you sign a 10-year deal, then you're looking at, you know, 33, 34. But when Katie Blackburn said it's what Joe wants, it very much showed that the Bengals understand, like, this is Burrow's show.
Right.
So from that standpoint, I don't think it's pretentious.
You know, and just yesterday, you know, Jalen Hurts signed a more short-term deal, you know, 5 years, $255 million. I think that's interesting to hear what you have to say, because there's sort of two schools of thought on it, is taking the shorter deal versus taking the Patrick Mahomes like longer term deal. I will say this, you when you think of just Joe Burrow's approach and his personality and his sort of, you know, his team first mentality, you know, it does make you wonder whether he would take a Patrick Mahomes type of deal, knowing that that would basically pretty much keep him a Bengal, right, for maybe his entire career, or at least a big chunk of his career. You know, maybe he would go somewhere else toward the end, but I don't know. I don't have a read on those things. But I think what you say is, it's an interesting point that you make, because I do think a lot of fans, you know, given what was said, you know, tend to think that, yeah, he'll just take that. He'll take a Patrick Mahomes type of deal. But as you say, that may not be the case.
Right. And what's important to note about the Jalen Hurts' deal is he was able to take less in terms of like a cap hit wise,
yep,
because the Eagles gave him a ton of money in incentives and in guarantees. And what's the one thing, you know about the Bengals, they historically are not big on guaranteeing a lot of money up front.
That's right.
But they're going to have to. So they're going to have to get creative here with how they set this contract up, because of course they don't want to set it up where they're not able to keep any of their other good players. But if they do it that way and they make the cap hit less, that means you're offering up more guaranteed money, which for teams like the Bengals and, you know, the Chargers and, you know, even Green Bay that are like family owned or city owned for Green Bay, like they don't have the same type of cash flow that the Eagles do, or that some of these other owners that have multiple businesses and a lot more money just sitting in escrow have there. So it's going to be very interesting to monitor. And I think it'll be very good for the first time when you get to talk to Burrow this offseason. Hopefully he'll be made available and to kind of gauge where he's at with all of it, because I think a lot of people are speaking for him with the whole, Burrow just wants to win. He's surely going to take a 10-year deal that's comfortable for the Bengals. Like, let's not put words in his mouth. You know, I think that's important to put out.
You know, I think too, and another, I think, point to make when it comes to when people want to say compare Joe Burrow to Patrick Mahomes from the contract standpoint, is Patrick Mahomes has a lot more, national endorsement deals as well.
Right, exactly.
And so, you know, how did that play into his decision to take that longer term deal?
That's a really good point.
Yeah, it was more team friendly, I guess, so to speak. It's hard to say that when so much money's involved. I think both sides are benefiting pretty nicely, but it's all relative to whatever profession you're in, and so you do wonder, like, Patrick Mahomes, is he able to take more of a deal like that because he makes so much more in endorsements than Joe Burrow? And is Joe Burrow even maybe looking at more endorsement opportunities as he kind of, we kind of look ahead to this contract extension?
Right.
I asked that question not knowing the answer.
Right. I think that's a really good point that you bring up, Jason, and I'm glad you brought that up because you're right. Like, Patrick Mahomes has State Farm. You see him on every commercial for State Farm. Coors Light's a big sponsor. Then he makes all that money from playing in that golf tournament every year with Josh Allen against Rodgers and Tom Brady. So I think it's not to say that Joe Burrow doesn't have, you know, money. He was the number one overall pick. Let's not forget about that. But I think it is important to bring that up because you're right. That does have probably some type of factor where Patrick Mahomes doesn't have to worry about an extra $5 to $10 million a year because he knows he's going to make that off of endorsements. So I think that's a really good conversation and we'll continue to talk about it. It'll probably be the thing you and I talk about most throughout this offseason. All signs point to this deal happening in July, you know, right before training camp. If you kind of look at it's not done now. It was either going to be the Bengals were going to beat everyone to the punch and do it before any of the other quarterbacks or now when, you know, because sometimes deadlines spur action and the Bengals don't technically want to give up all that cash. They probably want to hold off on it as long as they can because it's a lot of money coming out of their funds. So we'll see about that, but we'll continue to monitor that along the way. Another big thing this offseason that has gotten a lot of headlines is Joe Mixon's future with the team. And he showed up for voluntary offseason workouts yesterday, and he was in the locker room, and his court date is tomorrow for the charge against him for aggravated menacing, essentially a road rage incident that took place the day before the Bengals played the Bills in Buffalo. Still very interesting to see, you know, what happens there. If they decide to keep him on the team, does that mean that he's taking they offered him a pay cut and he took it? Or if they decide after the draft if they find, you know, a running back they really like, and then they decide to move on. It's really unclear what the Bengals' plans are with Mixon at this point. And, you know, I'll just bring up what Katie Blackburn said at the owners' meetings, and she left it very much as he's our guy right now. She left it very open-ended, and that's where all of, you know, the stories come from. And it'll be interesting to see because Samaje Perine, you know, came out and made some headlines the last couple of weeks saying that basically he didn't want to play second fiddle to anyone in Cincinnati. And for Cincinnati to have not, you know, made him the guy was a big reason why he wanted to go to Denver. So at some point you have to wonder, and I tweeted it and I got a lot of backlash from people in it, and it's nothing against Joe Mixon at all. It's just business. And I said, you have to wonder at what point is the Bengals continuing to hold on to Joe Mixon going to be an issue for them, for other players wanting to come there and be like the lead guy, for example, like Austin Eckler or Ezekiel Elliott. I'm not saying the Bengals are interested in them. I want to put that out there, but say they are, those guys want to come in and be the lead dog. So, at what point does keeping him on the team almost make it like harder for you to add to that position?
I don't know. The whole thing is just bizarre. And again, I've been pretty critical of the Bengals on this decision for him to still be here and kind of leave this whole thing up in the air. And again, it's just take away the off the field stuff for now and just look at his performance last year. It was not a good season for him. You have to question whether he's hit that kind of stage in his career where production falls off, and we see it in so many running backs in the NFL. Samaje Perine was clearly the better running back last year. You know, I think as of right now, the Bengals, and I say the words right now, the Bengals retained it seems like they didn't retain the right running back in between the two, Perine and Mixon. And then you throw on top of that the off-the-field stuff. And, you know, this is where my columns have focused on is that, you know, the Bengals have, with Joe Burrow, with Ja'Marr Chase, Zach Taylor, there's been such a on-field locker room cultural shift in a good way, in a positive way. T. Higgins, you know, you can just go down the line list of so many guys who have come and been part of, you know, trying to be part of the solution and winning for the Bengals. And certainly Joe Mixon was a big part of helping the Bengals on the field win. But it's not just about that. To me, the Bengals, they for so many years, players that had off the field issues, and you thought maybe the Bengals have moved on from that, and now for them, I think that's what makes this them retaining Joe Mixon right now, or maybe seeming like it's making people think it's in limbo, is just kind of bizarre, because the Bengals have done so much to change who they are, at least when it comes to their on-field performance, and I don't get it. I don't get it. And to me, it's like, why bring up memories of the way the Bengals used to operate? And it, to me, again, given Joe Mixon's performance last year, I don't understand why they're not moving on from.
Yeah, I've had a hard time trying to dissect this one, and I'm just going to do what, sometimes it's simply okay to do as a reporter and, supposed to be an expert and an analyst. Like, I don't know. I'm going to be humble and say I don't have the answers for it yet. I've tried my best to pry and get information out of people that do know. And that's all I can do in this stage. But it's definitely something I can't quite rationalize or explain. So we'll just see, what happens and let the cards shake out as mentioned, his court date is tomorrow. So we'll see, what happens, with that and be closely monitoring that. And then obviously with the draft next weekend, I would find it hard to believe if the Bengals take a second round running back, how is he not going to be the starter if he's more elusive and younger and gives you more speed? You just would hate to see, history and just like loyalty to a player kind of get in the way of like making sound decisions on like who's better, who's production wise. And
right. No, exactly.
The Bengals with Duke Tobin, have shown, this year, that's probably why I can't explain it, is like they went out and signed a left tackle when they already had a pretty good left tackle in Jonah Williams. I mean, Jonah Williams isn't a top 10 tackle in the league, but I wouldn't say by far he was the worst offensive lineman. And they went out and they replaced him for better production. So that's why I kind of can't put my finger on what's going on with Mixon, because they either are waiting and, they're going to see how the draft plays out and then they're going to make their decisions after that. But they've shown in other aspects that they'll put their feelings beside and surely make the business decision. And Zach Taylor's done that, with Jackson Carmen, right? He was a second round draft pick. And, you kind of get knocked from a GM or head coach if your second round draft pick is a bust and doesn't play. But he wasn't getting the job done. And the Bengals went another direction and they didn't really care about their reputations and not getting that pick right. So that's kind of where I'm a little lost with the Mixon thing. But we'll see how that all plays out there. The other main thing that I wanted to, kind of rehash is T. Higgins, where the Bengals at with T. Higgins and his extension. And pretty much when I go back to time is kind of ticking for the Bengals on Burrow, is they need to get the T. Higgins deal done before the season starts. Obviously, he has one more year left, but if you go into this season and he doesn't have a long-term extension, it's going to be very hard to picture a scenario in which he is a Bengal after this last season. So yeah. I don't think the Higgins deal comes before Burrow's, because you gotta have the funds for it and you need to know exactly what you're going to pay Burrow. And as we mentioned, that money comes out right away, but the Bengals have got a lot on their plates, with this Burrow extension, because it's holding up T. Higgins and Logan Wilson's deals in a sense. And I know Katie Blackburn said, you can negotiate other deals while you're doing this one. But the reality is their main focus is the Joe Burrow deal. And, you would just hate to see it, if it gets longer and longer. And then if come week one, the Bengals don't have a long-term extension in place with T. Higgins, yes, people will say, yes, Kelsey, they can franchise tag him next year. Well, how'd that turn out for Jesse Bates? He went and played for another team the year after the franchise tag. So I just think that's an important thing to bring up about, like, yes, there is time, but like time is starting to tick.
Yeah. The only thing I could say is I agree with you that once they kind of know how everything shakes out with Joe Burrow, then they know. I mean, these are smart people who run the Bengals, so they kind of know now. But ultimately, you know, how much money you're going to have left over for other contracts once Joe Burrow's done is a big question. And I agree with you. I think that no other contracts, you know, big ones get done until Joe Burrow does.
Right. So the next main thing on the Bengals calendar is the draft next weekend. And then we can do a more draft-centric podcast next week to get ready for it. But just your initial thoughts on, you know, why you're excited. I mean, this is your first draft covering as a sports columnist. So, you know, what excites you about the draft, knowing, you know, you're a big college football fan, and you know, there's kind of nothing like the excitement around the first round of the NFL draft, just because there's so much unknown.
Well, I think the excitement, or at least certainly the interest, comes from, you know, the Bengals draft again from a position of strength, instead of, you know, coming from a place where they're coming off yet another bad season and going into the draft, they're now drafting to. You know, not for necessarily, you know, looking at franchise players. They're now looking for solid role player types of players, essentially. And certainly players can become stars. But, you know, they're looking to plug holes. And that's the draft for them now versus that, you know, everyone's looking at that one, that first round pick is, oh, that's the savior of the franchise. You know, no longer is that the narrative going into a Bengals draft. And so certainly looking forward to that, to see, you know, this is, you know, the challenge for them is to find those, you know, those right guys that can now then just can step right in and be role players and maybe eventually rise to stars. You know, you talk about running back, talk about the tight end position. You go over to the defense, you know, are they going to, you know, what's, yeah, I think they probably need someone in the secondary, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, like, but those, they're not necessarily looking at the draft to think, oh, here are guys that we need to get that need to be like right away. We need to put all this pressure on them to become, you know, saviors of the franchise or to turn the franchise around. But you know, they can just sort of get guys and use this to, you know, fill in places of need. Which is it just blows me away. It's just so different for the Bengals now than it was for so many years.
Right. And I think you like nailed it. They are going to get to pick the best player available with knowing, yes, they take the best player available, but they do have holes to fill. But you don't have to reach is the point of what you're saying. You don't have to take a guy that you have a third round grade on in the first round because you feel the need to take a tight end. You can take a corner, like you said, and let him sit behind Chidobe Awuzie. And, you know, he'll be coming up towards the end of his contract with the Bengals. Or you could take an interior defensive lineman to potentially sit behind DJ Reader, whose contract ends after this next season. Like, you can kind of groom someone. And of course you want them to be an impact player right away. But if it's a guy that you say, we have to have this guy, and you don't necessarily have room for him in the starting lineup right away. I mean, how many times did the Bengals have injuries where people were thrusted into positions? You just never know, which is why I think the best teams can just continue to stack the roster with just really good players, regardless if they have a starter in place or not.
That's
right. So next week, Jason, you and I can kind of get into some more about like prospects and position groups that we think the Bengals will target, knowing at some point, yes, the first round is typically you take the best player available, but the draft is to fill needs, and the Bengals do have needs, and we can kind of hash out, you know, who are some of the players with expiring contracts coming up and get into a little bit more about the draft next week. But we just wanted to get on here and just rehash everything that's happened with the Bengals offseason. Jason's been busy covering the Reds. He was doing Xavier basketball's run. So we haven't had much of a chance to, you know, sit down and hash out the Bengals details. So that was kind of the point of this week's podcast. But next week, we'll aim it more towards the draft. And then next thing you know, it'll be draft weekend.
Big weekend in the NFL.
All right. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast. We'll talk to you guys next week.